Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Energy Speaks Back, powered by B2B Energy. My name is Paul Webb, and I'm the founder of B2B Energy, and I'm your host. Weekly, I present to you energy experts from around the world. Welcome to episode 143. Our purpose, as always, is to provide a good understanding of energy management knowledge from around the world, which is available today for us to deliver savings that impact on our planet. We would like to thank utility people who are creating a better career and future for people in our industry. Welcome, energy enthusiasts, to another enlightening episode of Energy Speaks Back. Today's guest has travelled to meet myself from California. He has been in London speaking at the Economist show. This interview was completed over an afternoon, with us meeting in the city for lunch and in our conversation continuing with a walk and talk through Stratford and then finally finishing up at the London Stadium. This podcast is a trio of conversation where I really turn up the questions around technology and sustainability. So without any further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Sheba Bhoumik.
How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Sheba. And how amazing is it that we're in the same room we're in, we're breathing the same air together. How amazing is that?
It is incredible, man. I'm so glad to see you finally.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
It has been quite a long time
coming.
Quite
a journey.
Quite a long time coming. And
I think really it all started in early 2020.
Yep. During the pandemic,
yep. Yeah. And a lot has changed since then. Obviously, we've seen the world change, but so much has been changing. We've had an interview, didn't we? I think that was 2021 we had the interview. So what's been changing since then? Tell us about the Sheba changes.
Yeah, so we have been making quite a bit of progress on the company front. Personally, I have learned tremendously from folks like you and others on our community. And at the same time, I am generally now appreciating more that people are also acknowledging to a certain extent that there needs to be some more changes that needs to happen. What we have been calling it is a course correction.
Yeah, yeah.
We are generally going in the right direction of the decarbonization and bringing everybody along in that same journey, but we do need a little bit of a course correction to speed up the process significantly, because any other pathway to getting to decarbonization seems like it's taking too much long, using excessive minerals and growing our footprint on nature, and that's a very severe pain point.
Yeah, yeah.
For global ecosystems.
Do you think since the pandemic stage that we went through, do you think people now are starting to listen more than before?
Yeah.
Before, say, 2018.
Yeah, so maybe I'll just give an example. The reason, as you remember, the Economist, the magazine, one of the most premier publications of the planet, they had a event, Energy Transition Summit, and also the Sustainability Week, just this week in London. They had invited me, and I'm honored that they even considered reaching out to us and getting me here. And that gave me an opportunity, along with some other collaboration that we are pursuing, and so made an incredible opportunity for me to come and visit and get a chance to talk to you. What I'm finding at these conferences lately, unlike 3 years ago,
yeah, yeah,
or even 2 years ago, that people are receptive and willing to listen and understand why we are not being able to get to the decarbonization targets fast enough. What are the challenges for the transportation electrification on an intermittent grid? And people are generally willing to give the time to listen, appreciate some of the challenges. And I wouldn't necessarily say that they're completely on board with what needs to be done, but they're at least participating in the discussions.
Yeah.
So that's a very big change.
When you talk about the targets, the global targets that we're heading towards, do you think they're realistic? Do you think they're achievable?
Well, let me be very candid. We absolutely have to decarbonize.
Yeah.
And we do have to decarbonize with gusto and with significant speed.
Yeah.
Because climatic conditions are collapsing, we are finding that the ecological boundaries are, we have already pushed on those significantly. So time is of the essence.
Mm.
We know some of the technologies that would exist going into the future, solar, wind, electric vehicles. The question is, how do we make this all play out with the least amount of footprint growth on nature and with the minimum amount of damages that is required for mining? As you know, this transition is not going to happen without minerals and material. Because electricity has no footprint, no shape or form, but it requires tremendous amount of material and minerals to overcome the energy content of fossil fuel.
Mm.
So how do we do this? I do believe that the mission that humanity is on is the right mission to pursue. But at the same time, we have to make sure that cost doesn't go up and everything else that I meant explained has to be intact, and we need to do this with the right speed. Can we do this with the existing framework and trying to preserve the existing paradigm? That's the issue. That really is the issue. I'm heartened by the fact that at this conference, given the stature at which The Economist is and their editorial board, they were pushing back. They were saying that maybe this agenda needs to be rethought and we need a new framework.
Mm. That's promising.
That is very promising.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't come out with a solution, because that's the task of the technologists, that's the task of the startup operations, to come up with innovative ideas. And maybe in our case, as we have been talking about, it's that architectural change, both in how we integrate electric vehicles and the grid together.
How does the technology, you talk about technology, how does that change? Has that got to evolve more, or have we got the technology as of today to do what we need to be doing?
The short answer is no. Right. We do not have the technology. As much as we would hear the same talking points, we have all the technologies we need. My simple question to you would be...
You're not meant to give me questions back, by the way.
No. It's kind of a rhetorical way of asking you. The simple thing is this. If we had all the technologies, why are we talking about inequity in the system?
Yeah.
Why are we talking about we are not making the transition fast enough?
Yeah, yeah.
It is inevitable then.
We've got the technology to do the baby steps to start doing this, haven't we?
That's correct.
We just need that technology to evolve, don't we?
Because we have to, let's not forget, we have to get the Global North and the Global South together working.
Yeah,
on
this. And the East and West.
And the East and
you
West.
You've got to bring it all together.
All together, and the folks that are being left behind right now, they are primarily being left behind because excessive costs in the system.
Exactly.
Both in terms of the capital costs and in terms of the price increases that are happening with electricity rates globally. And we can get into that topic briefly, but there was some great information and learning for me at this conference too.
And that's what brings you to the UK.
That's correct.
We're very fortunate, and thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks to the organizers to have me here. As a fact, right? So they said that yes, Norway has been the leader in adopting electric vehicles. They have 80% adoption of electric vehicles, at least in the new vehicle sales. So they have lots of electric vehicle moving around in the country and pretty good infrastructure for that. But what people don't fully understand, looking behind, why are they being able to do it beyond the policy mandates, is because their electricity mix is vastly different than that of the United States.
Yeah.
They have 88% hydropower supplying the grid. 88% hydropower is like the entire renewable resource is dispatchable.
Yeah.
In the United States, we have 6.6% hydropower, which wouldn't even move the needle with respect to renewables. And so when we are trying to bring in solar and wind into the mix, which is non-dispatchable resources, it creates a significant resource headache. And the only way to make this happen in the United States and similar electricity mix jurisdictions is with substantial amount of energy storage. To the level of, the energy storage itself would have to match the peak demand of the grid.
Yeah.
And those are prohibitively expensive with today's prices. And so we need architectural solutions.
When we talk about the drivers, there's an environmental driver. Where's the other drivers coming into it? Is there a financial driver to actually do what we're trying to achieve here?
Yeah, so there's this is a tremendous opportunity, right? With any other challenges that humanity typically faces. If we are able to overcome that, and we will overcome this, I have no doubt that we will get this all squared away, we will go in the right direction, because humanity has always gone towards higher efficiency solutions. And so we will get there. And that creates a significant amount of opportunity financially and monetarily. Yes, I understand there is a tremendous amount of momentum behind what has been proclaimed to be the path forward. But that is still the path forward. We are talking about, and the economists and the conference, the folks at the conference, we're also talking about that we probably need a little bit of a course correction. And that course correction could be substantial, but we'll be all be better for that, because we would have then uplifted many societies, many communities, and in the process we would be getting to decarbonization objectives and targets much sooner.
And is there one solution that's going to fit this, or is it going to be many, many solutions?
Well, we would need multiple generation solutions. Wind and solar, I'm big believers in those. There may be geothermal might play a role. There could be some amount of biomass that would also most likely, and they have already been playing a pretty substantial role in some of those jurisdictions. With respect to energy storage, we are finding that lithium ion has a pretty strong lead, because the electric vehicle requires lithium ion, and so the supply chain has progressed and matured very substantially. There may be other chemistries coming down the pipeline, but for the foreseeable future, I see lithium ion on the energy storage side. There may be some other flow batteries on the grid scale applications.
Do you think there's anything that we haven't thought about yet? Or it's not even on our radar? Do you think something will then come up, someone's exploring? And I'm just putting it out there, because sometimes there's stuff there that's under our noses we haven't even thought about yet.
Well, we have seen sodium sulfide batteries quite a bit. Supply chain may be a challenge in the beginning, but maybe they can come up to scale solve that problem. But the momentum behind lithium ion is very strong. The good part is, we are chemistry agnostic with our technology, with our power electronics technology, so we can accommodate anything high dense, high power.
Can you talk about storage, your solutions that you've got in your plans?
Our solutions are leveraging the electric vehicle as the quintessential bi-directional storage for the distribution network without having to go through any equipment deployment, any infrastructure, significant infrastructure build, leveraging the existing infrastructure and extending its life and extending its utilization even further.
Yeah.
So that's what we are trying to do.
That's got one fix already, isn't it? Because you just said about using the existing infrastructure. The existing infrastructure, the way it's being used now, currently, isn't going to be good enough, is it? It needs work. It's the weakest link.
It is the weakest link, and so we have to enhance and beef it up.
Yeah.
And the way to beef it up, there are two ways, two schools of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
One camp believes that we have to build major infrastructure, a lot of grid power, a lot of grid transmission lines. The other school, which I kind of believe is, and with the technological solutions, that is, we can extend the existing grid and probably can even bring in two times the renewables generation on the same grid by leveraging the distribution network. Now, there needs to be some adaptation and some technological innovation on the distribution network, but that is not to the extent the infrastructure build that we are otherwise contemplating.
Mm.
You have heard about NIMBY.
Yes.
Right? Not in my backyard. Now, the term that we are hearing is called banana.
Right.
Build absolutely nothing anywhere near anything.
Yeah.
Right? So,
Who are the people saying that?
Well,
government?
Communities.
Right.
The communities are waking up and saying that probably for the right reasons, most likely, because they are feeling the pain. They don't want these kind of infrastructure go up. And they are also pointing out that it's a sore eye, and it's sticking out in the middle of nowhere, and it's ruining not just the view for many properties, but it is actually damaging on nature.
Mm.
And that's what most people are complaining about.
Yeah.
So we are probably transitioning from the era of build and deploy to something build absolutely nothing anywhere near anything, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that's always been the struggles, because there's always going to be the what I call naysayers, isn't there? The people who say, no, that's not,
I think
we don't need that, we don't need that.
Well, you understand, but these are two extremes.
Yeah, yeah.
So the middle ground is leveraging the existing infrastructure. Let's get this to the fullest extent, utilize it to the maximum amount of material content that the grid already has.
Mm.
And let's not wait on this transition.
When we met online back in 2020, you've always been banging this drum. It's now 2024, you're still banging the drum harder and you're traveling. What are your challenges? What have you found your challenges to be doing this?
My challenges have been primarily in the 2 or 3 years ago, I couldn't even get people in the same room.
Right.
Now at least I can have people in the same room.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
can even sip coffee, tea together.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are listening.
Yeah.
So in a lot of sense, we have made quite a bit of progress.
Yeah.
We have seen policy progress on California side. We have seen the lawmakers recognizing the need for different approach, what I have been calling is the course correction. And we also are seeing some investor appetite before all the policy mandates are structured. So that is very positive.
I'm interested to know, the minute you wake up, you start working on this, to the minute you go to bed. And that's what you do every day.
You've been doing
that since 2020, yeah?
I have been, so SignWorks was founded in 2011.
Right.
We were only going to do solar photovoltaic and I'd be a happy man after that. And the plan didn't go accordingly. Solar has many challenges.
You've had a slight detour on the way, yeah?
And we had a slight detour in the way. And the detour, for good or for bad, actually is very substantial and extremely profound, because as you know, batteries cannot push power back into the grid by themselves, batteries cannot power electric motors, batteries cannot... by themselves, batteries do nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the power electronics that mated with the batteries or outside of the vehicle that makes things happen.
And that's your background and expertise, isn't it? Because I remember rightly,
it's the power
electrical electronics.
Power electronics, that's correct.
Doctor as such, aren't you? We should be calling you Dr. Sheba, yeah?
I go by Sheba Baum again, that's good enough, yeah. That itself is a difficult name sometimes for some people, so...
Yeah. So, how's the future looking now? You know, obviously we're getting bright because we're out and about.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I'm far more excited after coming to London. Mm. Not because it's a beautiful city, I get to meet you and in person.
Yeah.
But even beyond that, I see positive signs of people waking up to the recognition, people listening to what we are saying, people admitting that we do need a course correction. Mm. We haven't yet gone to the place that, okay, this is the solution that we have been advocating, but we are getting there. We are very close, close.
Yeah.
So before I couldn't get people in the same room, now I can get people in the same room. People are listening, understanding, recognizing, and the next step would be working together and manifesting.
And going back home now, you're back home tomorrow, but will you be able to take something back with you of confidence that you can then take back to California and to leverage back again to give it more lift?
Yes, I will take back the messages that I learned and the data and the facts that were shared at the conference, and which I'll be talking very soon.
Yeah.
Some of it I already discussed with you here. And relay that back to the policymakers in California and our collaborating partners in California. It will only highlight to them that the need for the change is now, and the need for the change is not if, it's a matter of when. And as the more we delay, the more damages we are doing on nature, the more of those planetary boundaries we are confronting against, and more we are taking away an easier life out of the future generations. So it's time for us to now act and make things happen. I brought up Norway, and which is another thing I learned at the event. 80% electric vehicle adoption on an annual basis. Most of the vehicles are electric today. I'm talking about the new vehicles that are being sold. But what they're seeing is only 11% fossil fuel reduction. That means the vehicles that are getting adopted, that are getting bought, are really not moving the needle.
Yeah.
So we need to cater our policies, we need to cater our mandates in such a way that we make the biggest bang for the buck. When we are going to put in all these incentives and build the infrastructure, we want to do so for vehicles that really moves the needle, or vehicles that really move the needle. The reason is, what good does it do? Because as you know, I mean, electric vehicles requires a lot of minerals. So we want to utilize that mineral and get the biggest mileage out of it.
Yeah.
So far as decarbonization is concerned.
So as you know, this goes out to energy experts around the world. Is there any messages you want to give to them as a takeaway? You know, I normally do my takeaway.
Well, it's
something to give back to the industry.
London and my general travels in the UK has been one of fulfilling hope. I'm energized that the British are receptive. They are listening, they are watching, they are progressing in the right direction, and they are also acknowledging that certain changes need to happen. The same thing we are finding in California.
Yeah.
Certain facts cannot be hidden, and all the trouble spots are now showing up through this transition process. And my general message is that it's not that we do not have all the technologies. We may have the general idea of what needs to happen,
yeah,
but the implementation details still needs to be worked out.
Yeah.
And implementation details, the devil is in the details. Mm. And
it's as if we need a process map put against all this to understand what steps to take, when to take them, how to take them, isn't it? Everything's all there. It's like a puzzle box, I suppose. We've got all the bits. We need people to put them all together in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, so the progression that is happening now, let it keep going.
Mm.
At the same time, we need to invest in the next generation technologies.
Yeah.
The next generation technologies that is going to make the grid far more distributed, decentralized, and dematerialized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And let's make that happen. Leverage the electric vehicles, the next generation electric vehicles, like the way we want it to happen.
Yeah.
With all the infrastructure built in, it reduces the pressure points on the system and lowers the capacity build, thereby making a just transition by lowering the cost for everybody.
So Shiva, are you able to concentrate? I know you've got so much things, the distractions around here. We're just walking through the tube station.
Yeah.
And we're going to put you on loads of pressure here because we're going to ask you loads of questions about technology and your knowledge around it.
It's all good. Putting pressures is a good thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
pressure, do you know...
sometimes you excel under pressure.
I've got a saying actually around that.
Yeah.
Pressure is a privilege. You know that?
Oh, that I didn't know. I know that pressure is what makes diamond out of carbon.
Right, that's interesting to know.
Pressure and intense temperature.
Right.
So how can I help?
We discussed some of this on the podcast recently about have we got enough technology around us today to deliver the challenges going forward? And your answer then was a clear no, basically, because it needs to evolve more. So how can it evolve? What needs to happen?
We need energy density solutions that can compete and compare to a certain extent to that of fossil fuel, especially gasoline. So even if you look at all you discounted for the primary energy, and you look at the inefficiencies of the fossil fuel driven drivetrain versus that of the electric drivetrain, and it's proclaimed higher efficiency, which is true,
yeah,
we still see more than an order of magnitude difference in energy density,
right,
between the energy density of fossil fuel and that of energy storage that we have today.
And is that the same as us saying calorific value of coal compared to wood? Is that the same thing?
It is very similar, but then the calculations that I am relaying here takes into account that the primary energy of coal, or actually, I mean, I was referring to gasoline.
Yeah, yeah.
The primary energy of gasoline is 2/3 is burnt up and it becomes carbon dioxide and other waste products. It doesn't really necessarily go into energy.
Yeah.
So that's already accounted for in that calculation that I just talked about. So
yeah. We jokingly was talking about pressure as we started this. And I'm just thinking now, the pressure that must be on the industry, not necessarily our industry regarding the energy industry, but car industry, for instance.
Automotive, yeah.
What pressure are they under at the moment regarding
doing? It's intense. And so they are trying to bring a new technology, a new method of transportation, where they have to do scale up on the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And on a grid system that was never designed to handle powering electric vehicles.
Yeah.
The grid was never designed to handle anything like that. Then on top of it, you have supply chain issues. Mm-hmm. We have concentration of mineral production in certain parts of the world. So that creates security concerns with respect to this energy transition.
Yeah.
And will we be able to have a full oversight and a full purview of our own destiny with respect to the energy transition?
Yeah.
So these are formidable challenges that the automotive manufacturers are having to deal with today. But as with anything, this is a learning experience. It's all growing pains. And the industry will overcome this. Mm. But we need to be constantly striving and looking for solutions that figures out how to minimize the solution's footprint, mineral content, so that, I mean, you reduce those pressure points.
Can you compare this? I was reading a book recently, and it was talking about Ford, when he brought out the Ford motor car, and he had a lot of naysayers at the time were saying, well, no, I'm going to stick with my horse. I don't want a car. It's too dangerous. Are we going back in time here regarding the electric vehicle compared to the conventional petrol vehicle? Is it history repeating itself? That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's a great point you bring up. So Henry Ford once famously quipped that if I had asked customers what they wanted, then they would have said faster horses.
Exactly, yeah.
So people are trained to continue thinking in the same paradigm and moving it a few incremental steps forward.
Yeah.
They can never really think outside the box, typically. And we are seeing very similar constraints in the deployment of the infrastructure and the transportation electrification methodology that is being deployed today.
Yeah.
Is all being done in a way to emulate that of the gasoline infrastructure.
Right.
More or less.
Yeah.
But only getting replaced
with
electric transportation modes.
Yeah.
However, electricity is not like gasoline in the sense that electricity doesn't store energy. Unlike gasoline, electricity is not the generation. You need another generating plant or generating resource to produce electricity.
Yeah.
But gasoline is all of those. And gasoline can be distributed by using just cans.
Yeah.
And electricity requires a lot of infrastructure to do that.
Yeah.
So to view that or to contemplate that we could emulate a gasoline infrastructure with a resource like electricity may not have been the right approach.
Right. Got you. It starts to have all its own algorithms around it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because the other thing is what some people discuss is, you know, how much materials have we got to mine to get to where we need to be. There's that scenario. So renewable doesn't really become sustainable, does it? If you was to start bringing the whole complete story.
The recycling.
Yes.
Piece of the batteries and the mineral that is utilized in solar power and all the material that is used for wind turbines.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I mean, we do need to think this holistically and figure out a design and the implementation such that we really emphasize on recycle, reuse, and reduce.
Yeah. So what I really feel going forward is that this is a really large step for us to make, but it isn't the last step we're going to be taking. there's many, many steps we need to take to get to this next step. And there's probably going to be many, many more steps after this large step, if I'm making sense here.
Absolutely. I don't think that humanity is going to stop producing any kind of energy systems.
Yeah.
Once we get to some level of decarbonization, there will be probably the need for additional energy density improvement because our energy demand is going up every day.
And
we now have AI.
And the population is going up
as well,
isn't it?
And the population is going up. There is upliftment of society. And any time people get uplifted, what do? You're spending more energy.
Yeah, invest more money into technology,
etc. And that means, I mean, you're using more energy to do everything.
Yeah.
You'll be going out, you'll be buying you'll be buying a vehicle, you'll be driving around,
Simplistic things about buying new clothes,
yep,
new shoes. You have more money to go and invest in fashion because it's going to change.
That's right.
Well, that's just going to put more.
And anytime you're either driving, you're taking the car, or you're taking the public transport, so you're using the infrastructure more. And we would be, for various different communities that are disadvantaged today, may need not be in a few years' time, and now they have been uplifted and they will spend more energy.
Yeah.
So we have energy demand increasing. Then on top of it, technology is pushing its boundaries with respect to what we can do with computing technology. And so AI is becoming an intense load on the electricity grid. So was distributed journals or distributed ledger systems like Bitcoins and others. And so then you have data centers. We have the entire knowledge base probably in clouds today.
Yeah. When you think about what knowledge is actually sitting there, it's significant, isn't it? When you've got the likes of
and it is intense amount and very concentrated energy demand from these data centers. So we are creating hotspots of energy demand.
We're on one side of us, we're creating all these hotspots for demand to reduce sustainability. And on the other hand, we're trying to develop sustainability.
We are innovating on the sustainable methods of deploying and generating energy.
Yeah.
But we are not doing it fast enough.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. The balance is too far.
It's too
one way, isn't it?
Yes.
How do we address the balance? I know people like you and I, we communicate a lot on the likes of LinkedIn, social media, to try and advise people, this is what we need to do, this is the balance. But me and you are only two people, so we can't shift.
The balance cannot be handled solely from the supply side. If we keep plugging in more systems on the supply side and expecting that somehow we are going to meet the demand on the demand side, where we essentially live, work and play, we are never going to solve this problem.
Yeah.
Because we cannot produce and supply enough to keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
So the way we have to manage both sides.
Yeah.
And so on the demand side, we have to reduce our energy intensity for everything that you do. We have to reduce our resource intensity so that, I mean, we are able to do incredibly more with, we are able to do exceedingly more with incredibly less.
Yeah.
And that ties into the energy intensity reduction.
So all my life is spent working on the demand side. I can honestly say that I drive down energy, and that's the most challenging part, I think. But the most rewarding part, because I feel by working with the demand side, we can make a big saving, 50% of that, possibly.
But you're immediately making material difference for businesses and consumers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
and you can see the results.
It's not everyone. It's only selected people that have identified the need to do that. And currently the drive to do that isn't the environment. The drive to do that is financial.
Let's take a picture in front of your team.
Yes. So for the benefit of and the audience, we are at the London Stadium and we just stopped to have a quick photo shoot outside the London Stadium, of all places. Of all places to bring my close friend Shiva all the way from California, I had to come and show him this stadium. So when you look around here, Shiva, what do you see? You see significant amounts of
development,
buy into that demand, don't you?
Yeah, these things didn't happen without intense amount of energy.
Yeah,
that's what I see every time I see new development, new construction, and
yeah. So can we dare to put timescales on this, Shiva? Would you like a timescale in your mind of?
Yeah, I think if we are allowed to make architectural changes by the policies and the regulators, the policymakers and the regulators, and they realizing that the course correction that I was talking about is somewhat essential, then I believe we will first start to see some sped up on the electric vehicle adoption roadmap beginning the end of the decade.
Right.
And beginning of the next decade is when we are going to see massive scale up.
So you're talking 2030, we're going to start seeing the beginning of this.
Yeah, if the architectural changes are able to implement and make the adaptations and the modifications that are necessary.
Is this all part of the drive for 2050? Is it linked to 2050?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, these things take decades to get to scale.
Yeah.
And so we need to complete the development, we need to complete the demonstration, and then we go into limited deployment in about the end of the decade. And then we start looking into scaling up with major pilots beginning the early part of the decade, next decade. And then after that, it's in the growth phase.
Yeah.
The early adopters have already gone through that cycle. Then you're getting into the mass. The majority comes in, and then the late majority.
Yeah.
And so if you had to combine all of those, I can see 2030s would be massive scale up, considering that we have brought in all the architectural changes that I have been talking about.
And do we need large organizations to jump on board to drive this?
Oh yeah, it has to be completely a collaborative effort for everybody to be sharing their knowledge base and learning from it together and be part of this journey.
Yeah.
No one entity would be able to do anything like this.
No.
Everybody has to be involved. They need to appreciate the challenges they need.
So I want to touch on the technology that you feel that we need to explore and we need to take forward.
In a nutshell, the philosophy that we are working towards is making the electric vehicle not a burden on the electric grid, but rather a quintessential part of the electric grid.
Yeah.
It's a radical thinking because the electric grid today, as you know, is static and stationary. Power poles, transformers, they cannot be moved around. They're installed and they're static and they're also stationary. And by making the electric vehicle as the infrastructure and onboarding its charging, bidirectional capability, all the power electronics built into the electric vehicle allows us to radically rethink how a mobile infrastructure could be utilized for the future grid.
Yeah.
Now, when I say future grid, what I really wanted to emphasize is that by making it completely distributed, decentralized, and localized, utilizing rooftop solar or solar on built surfaces, and the electric vehicles as the quintessential energy storage for the distribution network, that is the part of the future grid. That is the future grid.
Do we start talking about microgrid as well?
It becomes, the operationally, you could probably view it as microgrids.
Yeah.
We would constitute an architect micro utility, so to speak.
Yeah.
Within the feeder networks, and these micro utilities would have to be balanced on their own.
Yeah.
And then they integrate with other micro utilities to form a vastly distributed network of energy resources that primarily resides on all the built surfaces and the built areas where we live, work, and play. The cities, towns, and villages, essentially what it becomes.
Yeah.
And
we talked about earlier about the villages are now having to subsidize the cities. Would this technology and this process or concept, will that look to balance out the city cost with the village? So we wouldn't see that so much.
That's correct, because you're now utilizing local energy.
You're localizing it.
Yeah, you're utilizing and expending local energy and consuming local energy. Yeah. And so what happens is you're not having to carry the cost forward and give it to somebody else's as a new burden for a different community.
Right.
Now, there are challenges in how we're going to make all of this seamlessly play together, but that's where technology comes into the picture. There would be layers of sophistication built in based on raw physics. There will be also a place for AI.
So, going back to where we were, SignWatts is the vehicle to deliver this concept, this process, to drive it. You're going to use SignWatts as the vehicle. Am I right in saying?
Yeah. We, in an ideal world, we would like to collaborate with all the OEMs and the tier one suppliers and provide them the platform so that they can build their version of their vehicle and utilize them for whatever application they need to build the vehicle for, including passenger and commercial and other applications. And the platform itself is scalable.
Yeah.
So it can be designed and architected for many different use cases, vehicle shapes and structures.
And quite a few times today you've insisted that it needs to start in California because that is where the biggest pain is at currently.
It's showing up right now because of high EV adoption on a highly penetrated renewables grid.
Right.
Or a highly renewables penetrated electricity grid. And so these problems are showing up, and we believe the solutions need to be architected and deployed in California and then probably can be scaled and catered to the rest of the world.
Yeah. It's got to start somewhere, hasn't it?
It has to start somewhere. That's correct. And any kind of weak grid will see this problem.
Yeah.
Any kind of constrained grid on island nations and others where you have these kind of, where you have similar rates of vehicle adoption, EV adoption, you could start seeing these problems too. So.
And California, do you feel that that has got one of the biggest take-ups of EV?
Yes.
Currently?
Yeah, in the US for sure. It is by far.
Is there any reasoning behind that?
The incentive programs in California, right, coupled with the mentality and the progressiveness of its citizens.
Yeah.
So California leads.
Is that a typically. Musk? Is that a Musk area? Elon Musk, is he in the area? Is Tesla, in the area?
I do not keep track of his
activities,
personal whereabouts, but Tesla, the car company, definitely contributed significantly in making electric vehicles a reality.
Yeah.
So whatever.
Exercise on wheels.
Yeah. What our thesis and future visions and everything is standing on the shoulders of all the hard work that has happened over the last 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And hopefully someone would again stand on our shoulders and take it to the next level.
And that's what it needs, isn't it?
That's what it needs.
And then someone to have that vision.
Yes.
To get hold of it.
And keep moving forward.
Yeah. Because I know you've got your mindset and your focus set on building some...
the future grid for vehicle transportation.
You want to build some model cars, don't you? Not model cars, some example cars.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
To show how this can work.
Yes. And also, in an ideal world again, we would have to show the entire infrastructure.
Yeah, the intent.
In a confined manner.
Yeah.
That this infrastructure is viable and it works seamlessly and it operates together with the vehicles of the future and the future grid.
Can I ask a direct question here?
Yeah.
How far away do you think you are?
We are. I think to qualify. We probably expect to see some very positive results, the fruits of our labor, so to speak, before the end of the decade.
Yeah.
And then we will see some upward uptick of the technology beginning, rapid uptick of the technology beginning early next decade.
So, Shubha, we're coming to the end of our walk here, and I just really, once again, I want to say, really honoured that you've opened up and told us your story regarding this journey you're taking, and B2B Energy are very proud that they've been following this story from day one.
Thank you so much.
It's an amazing story, and we're really looking forward to see where it takes us.
Yeah, I'm excited that I have been part of this community and learned a lot, especially from folks like you and some of our friends, our common friends, and I look forward to working with you guys, and we look forward to help move the industry to the next
for the benefit of the audience, we've nearly just got run over by a diesel car.
We don't want to do that.
It's like-minded people, isn't it, that are working on this, in this team?
Yes.
I always say this, we all speak different languages, but we all speak the same language of reducing carbon, saving our planet.
And betterment of humankind. Right?
Yeah. So. And I like to also say that, we want to leave the planet in a better shape than what we arrived in.
Yes.
That would be that's my legacy that I want to leave behind. And one day, people will be listening to this interview many, many years' time, thinking, wow, these guys, they were well ahead of their time.
These guys were a little crazy.
That's the problem. We're class as being crazy, but our mind and hearts are in the right place.
Yeah, that's right.
Shubha, once again, it's been a real pleasure. I'm going to say it again.
It has been so much fun spending time with you, Paul, and it was a fascinating afternoon I got to spend with you guys. And
thank you.
No, thank you so much, though. And appreciate you spending the time with me and asking these such deeply probing questions.
Get the mind going, yeah?
There you go.
Brilliant.
It's always a pleasure spending time with you. So,
thanks, Shubha. We look forward to seeing you on your next journey with us again in the UK and online, of course, as well.
Absolutely.
Well, Shubha, I feel really honoured that you're in London and you come and see me.
It's been amazing.
It has been incredible.
It seems a bit surreal that we're talking to each other without going through a laptop and
then
things.
Suddenly, all of a sudden,
happened. Yeah, it's amazing. So I feel privileged that you've come on and you've allowed me to sort of grab some time.
It is always fun to be with you. And obviously, we spend a lot of time online, but this is great to be sitting together and breathing the same air.
Brilliant. And then thank you, Shiva. Honestly, it's really great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And sorry, lastly, you and your family, stay safe in these times.
Yes, you too.
Thank you, energy enthusiasts, for listening to the episode. I had great pleasure in putting that episode together with Shiba. We spent an amazing afternoon talking about energy transition and what it really means to us. And, you know, he has been doing some amazing work over the last couple of years since I've known him, and he's really taken some really great steps, as we were discussing, towards an amazing story for energy transition. So Shiba, on behalf of B2B Energy, thank you, and we wish you well.